Accession number 26730, Reel 1.
Matthew Collins, Reel 1. Can I start by asking you when you were born and where that was?
I was born in Govan in Glasgow on the 19th of January 1928.
Can you tell me a little bit about your family and the area that you grew up in?
Well, I lived quite a while, probably about the first 10 years in Govan in Glasgow. And then we moved to near Maryhill in Glasgow. I was one brother, two sisters. My father went to South Africa, so my mother more or less brought us up herself.
What did your father do?
He was a steelworker for Stewart's and Lloyd's.
And can you tell me about your home? What was that like?
Well, we lived in tenements. In those days, there was different standards of tenements, so people lived there, and as they progressed, they sought out through another. The tenements were leased by what they called factors then days. So you moved to better accommodation as you got on. There were various size apartments, two bedrooms, one bedroom, different things like that.
What sort of facilities did you have at home?
Well, early on, I can still remember people getting electric light put in, for example. A lot of people still had gas in there in the 30s and that, and it was quite big when you got that and could get a toilet put in and that, or a bathroom. But that took some time for some people to get, you know. In the meantime, there was public baths. People used to go to the public baths. There was a public laundry.
Did you have a bathroom at home?
Initially not, no. We used to bath down in the public baths. And my mother used to wash, and it had a public laundry, which was illustrated something similar in a show that was in London and various parts of Ireland called The Steamy, which was similar and reminded me very much of taking the washing down from my mother when I was a kid.
And what about your education? What do you remember about that?
Well, I went to the usual primary school. I think it was called Garnet Hill School. And then secondary school, I went to St George's Road Secondary. Well, by that time, I lived further up George's Road, so it wasn't very far to go to school, which is near Maryhill. And I left at 14 and went to work.
What sort of hobbies or pastimes did you have when you were a child?
Well, we didn't have hobbies and pastimes as such as what people would maybe talk now. I mean, you just went out playing football. You went to football to see the matches, things like that. I used to live near, quite near the Patrick Thistle's football ground, which is still there at Fair Hill.
Were you a member of any church organisation or anything like that?
Well, not organisation with church, but I was in the Boys' Brigade, I remember, and the Cubs. I was in the Cubs for a while as well.
You left school at 14. Mm. What did you do after that?
Well, at 14, I went to work for a warehouse down Argyle Street called Telfer's. And I worked sometimes inside, and then I worked with a driver on a van, became like a van boy, delivering goods all around Glasgow and the vicinities.
What sort of goods?
What sort of goods? Well, it's a warehouse. It was clothing, all sorts of goods out of a what you call a superstore now, you know. It's called Telfer's Warehouse.
Do you remember how much you got paid and what sort of hours you had to work?
Well, when I first started work, I think I only got about £1 a week, you know. Most of it I give to my mother, and I had just a few shillings left.
And what sort of hours did you have to work? Did you have to work on a Saturday, for example?
Pardon?
Did you have to work on a Saturday, for example?
I can't quite remember that, I'm sorry. I should imagine I probably did. I can't be definite about that, but I think it was Saturday working in them days, you know.
And how long did you have that job for?
Well, up to I was 16, because you couldn't start your trade still then, you know. So I started, I wanted to be an electrician originally, but there were no vacancies at the time, so I started as a locksmith. And I worked as a locksmith then until I went to the Air Force.
Was that a formal apprenticeship? Or
it would have been, but I could have been exempt, but the boss knew that I wanted, because I told my mother I wouldn't volunteer when I was 17, but when I was 18, I was going into the Air Force.
What drew you to the Air Force in particular?
Sense of adventure. Just wanted to join up.
But what, I mean, there's the Navy and there's the Army as well. I mean, what particularly drew you to the Air Force?
Well, I'm sad to say, really, that that's just the one I wanted to go in. I wanted to go in the Air Force.
I was just wondering if there's any experience, you know, that you'd had earlier that...
No,
you
well, not that I can think of. I don't know, like any sort of young fellas, but I might have read this or that in the papers, you know, and just decided to join it.
So you were 17 or 18?
No, I was 18.
18. So that would be in
1946,
just mm-hmm. after the end of the war.
Yeah. Just after my birthday. February, wasn't it?
Before we move on to that, what do you actually remember of life in Glasgow during the wartime?
Well, I mean, I'd done the same thing that any young Glaswegian had done, I suppose. When I left school, I suppose I started playing, I played a lot of snooker. And then I got into dancing, probably about 16 or 17 I was probably then. Glasgow was one of the places for dancing in the whole of Britain, wonderful various halls. So I went dancing a lot, and just the usual things that young chaps done.
How did the war affect your day-to-day life? And I mean, bombing and so forth,
yeah,
and air raids and...
Well, Glasgow, we never got bombed. The nearest bomb to where I lived was probably in Maryhill on a street called Kilmun Street, which got wiped out by part of a tenement demolished by a landmine. That was some way away, but a couple of miles maybe, something like that. But you could hear the bombing and that, and they'd done, wiped out Clyde Bank, the village of Clyde Bank, probably in one night. That was very serious, but that was quite a distance away, just outside Glasgow. I could remember things like eating in what they called a British restaurant in them days, where you could get a meal in a suite for a shilling, I think it was, something like that, you know. And people carried on. I followed the war on the radio and in the papers. And I can remember the various victories and setbacks during the war, roughly like, you know, I can't remember in detail, but I remember how excited people were at the victories and disappointed at the defeats in Africa and things like that.
But what about your life? How was it affected? I mean, did you have to go to an air raid shelter at night?
No, my mother, we decided, my mother decided, and we didn't say that thing, that we'd all stay together. And there was nothing like, if you're in a house, of course, you could get Anderson shelters dug up and things like that in England, but we just stayed where we were and just survived.
What about rationing and
I can remember the rationing. Well, food was scarce like everybody else, but I can't remember in detail ever being actually hungry, you know. My mother, I was fortunate, my mother was always a good cook and could, you know, make a meal and that. And I don't remember detail being hungry, but rationing was around and you didn't get much of this and much of that, you know, little bits of butter and stuff like that. And that went on, of course, long after the end of the war, you know.
I don't know if you had any family in the services. Was your father still in South Africa?
No, he died in South Africa, my father. My mother married again in 1946, so I had a stepfather.
Were you still in the Boys Brigade? I wondered if the Boys Brigade did anything to help air raid wardens or anything like that.
No, I can remember. I played in a band, I learned the drums in there. But, no, we just went practising and marching around here and there. And when I was in the Cubs, they'd done shows and that, you know, Scouts and Cubs. Done little stage shows and that. I had a pretty comfortable life, really, during the war. But as a kid, I can't remember any had from her mother, but
in what way was it?
Well, she had a lot of pictures of four kids. She had to work, you know.
Well, what did she do?
Well, just anything, you know, cleaning, scrubbing stairs. I remember one of her best jobs was working for a doctor and scrubbing his steps and out of his house, things like that. It was a hard but happy life.
So 1946, you joined the RAF. Could you explain how you came to join the RAF and talk me through the process of recruitment?
Well, I just got called up. My papers got called up after I was 18, and I went in on actually the 14th of February, I believe it was.
So that was, you were called up for national service?
Yeah, yeah. I went to Padgate, a place called Padgate, Area Padgate. I was an induction centre. I can't remember, I'd probably done my basic training there. And then you done various tests and that, and what you were capable of and wanted to do. So I thought I was interested then in working on that flight airframe. So I started to be trained as a flight mechanic, airframes, and went to St Athens in South Wales. But a bit through the course, I decided to try and change. And you know, they weren't too happy about that because of the involvement and training in that, but I realised that I didn't want to do that. So I was attracted, probably seen adverts at the time, I can't remember, but I realised then that the RAF Regiment, become conscious of the RAF Regiment, and I thought that would be an adventurous life. So I applied for that, and after a bit of a hassle, they posted me to RAF Halton in Buckinghamshire. Well, I'd wait to get into the RAF Regiment.
Can you...
During that period, I signed on for 7 years. I liked the life, but I didn't want to be a mechanic at the time. So I went to the RAF Regiment.
So what did you like about the life?
Well, I liked the RAF Regiment because it was a tough life, a lot of camaraderie. I trained in Yorkshire on the moors. And went to various squadrons and posted a squadron in Germany. I went straight out as a corporal.
Tell me a little bit more about the RAF Regiment. What sort of duties were they involved in, and how big was it?
Oh, it was quite big. The RAF Regiment had many, many squadrons during the war. There were four-figure squadrons. I went to 2770, which changed the very week that I joined the squadron and become 56 Rifle Squadron in a place called RAF Guttersloh. And we'd done various training. You went out on assault courses, route marches, and defence training, firing on the range, live firing on the ranges, and different things like that. There was several hundred men on each squadron all over Germany.
What was the function of the RAF Regiment then?
The RAF Regiment was basically in defence of the RAF airfields, and you also trained RAF personnel in ground combat duties so that they could fire weapons as well in an emergency, you know. And you were just kept in a state of readiness for whatever duties you were called on.
So how long was your training, and can you tell me perhaps in a bit more detail what that involved?
Well, the training was probably about 3 months, I think, at RAF Catterick, Yorkshire, which was a regiment depot then. It's since moved a couple of years back to RAF Honington, down south here, Suffolk, I believe that. And I can't remember in details. It was just... It was army life. You've got to understand, the RAF Regiment in them days were not all in blue. The uniform was khaki, and the beret and belt and gaiters were blue. But the basic uniform was all khaki. So you were, in fact, a soldier, and as I said, well trained.
After you completed the 3 month training, you said you were emerged as a corporal?
Well, I can't quite remember whether I actually left as a corporal or became a crop when I got the squadron, because I originally wanted to be go to MT and be a driver. You went to a place, Wheaton, I think, near Blackpool. But because the powers that be deemed that I'd got through the training that good, they allotted me as a potential corporal. So I either left as a corporal or was immediately made a corporal when I arrived at Guttersloh. But that was, I was a corporal there, you know. And squadron duties in the stations was just, as I said, there were several hundred men. You were responsible for all security. You got to remember this was 47, this was still fairly a short time after the end of the war. It was still active service. And so you were kept up to pitch, alert and good training.
Can you explain to me how the RAF regiment worked? How did it integrate with the rest of the RAF? Were you sent to specific bases, RAF bases, and how separate were you from...
Well, the RAF regiment in every station had its own quarters, and it integrated to a certain extent with the RAF, but you were separate, and most people in the regiment, we liked to be separate. Although we were in the RAF, being in the RAF regiment was extra special. And even to this day, the drill squad that you see in all the television parades, the Queen's Colour Squadron, is a section of one of the squadrons that I served on. But it wasn't, it was formed as a demo flight, and it's evolved into the Queen's Colour Squadron.
So, the first base that you were sent to was...
RAF Guttersloh.
Can you describe the setup there?
I can't remember the station in detail. The all these stations were Air Force stations and that. Most of them were active and still had planes there, squadrons there. So you had all these protection duties and you were just kept alert, training and that, and mounted various guard duties, went on exercises, as I said, when they were... people or NCOs were training, they'd be training their own people, they might be called to train RAF personnel, only usually that was done after you were back in this country, you know, most of that was done.
So, would you have separate courses from the rest of the RAF on the base?
Mm. Oh, they had their duties. We were RAF regiment duty. For example, when I was in Berlin, during the airlift, I was a squadron donner, was a dispatch rider. There were four of us, but we also took turns to be station dispatch rider. So that, when you were station dispatch rider, you would be doing duties for the RAF station commander, as well as doing the regiment duties. But so on that day, you'd be a station donner.
What I'm trying to get at, if I can, is could you explain the structure? So... RAF regiment is separate from the RAF, and you have different ranks or different...
The officer rank and the sergeant, etc., is exactly the same as the Air Force. Corporals, sergeants, flight sergeants, warrant officers, pilot officers, flight lieutenant, squadron leader, all the ranking is the same. But they are in the RAF regiment. You're in the RAF, but that you're in the RAF regiment, which is within the RAF. But whereas the RAF have gone about like doing their jobs in stores and looking after the aircraft, mechanic-wise, etc., and doing all their duties, the RAF regiment is doing their duties.
So you have a separate command structure?
Oh, yes. Separate command structure, yeah.
And you talked about protection duties. Could you describe those in a bit more detail?
Well, on the stations, there would be various entrances. You might be employed to mount a guard there. In Germany, there were various other places. Like I used to mount a guard at the CNC of Olive Baffel, which was called then. It was a British Air Force of Occupation. And he had a residence there, and the various squadrons from all over would send detachments to mount a guard at this Air Marshal's residence. And when he come in and out and that, you'd call the guard out and that on parade and things like that. And the rest of the time, you would just mount security duties. And then there was radar stations, etc., that had to be guarded. There was, you had to protect against pilfering and various things by the German community and things like that, because things were still pretty rough out there at the time. You know, there was displaced person camps all over the place. It wasn't like it is now.
So you sent out to Germany in 1947? Seven. Was that for the airlift, or...?
No, I joined 56 Squadron. Later on, I was a corporal then, and after I had an accident, I was in a road accident in 47, Hogmanay, December, and after that, I relinquished my corporal rank, trained as a dispatch rider, and was posted straight into the airlift to replace somebody that was getting the mob from 54 Rifle Squadron. So I took his place.
So you joined 54 Rifle Squadron?
Hmm?
You joined 54 Rifle Squadron?
Yeah, that then I was what they call an LAC, a Leading Aircraftman.
And which base were you sent to?
Gatto. RAF Gatto.
You were actually in Berlin itself?
In Berlin, yeah, all the time.
Can you describe, so you joined in, you went to Gatto in 1948?
Yeah.
Do you remember which month?
Well, the airlift more or less started in it was either end of May or early June. I can't remember actually, because there's something in the back of my mind somewhere that because they knew we were having repeated increasing trouble with the Russians, you see, threatened to blockade. I can't remember whether they sent me a bit early to get me in, because they were starting blocking everywhere and the roads are at. But more or less, must have been June, sometime in June, you know.
And do you remember your first impressions when you arrived in Gatto?
Oh, well, the basic impression you get there is squadron life was surprisingly still the same. You had your own blocks, and which I've seen since in the 50-year anniversary, been out in the actual blocks where we were quartered. It was just noise, sheer noise and activity. Planes were coming in there and out every couple of minutes. It was hectic, and when I had to go down on the bike, that was pretty hairy to go on down to Berlin with dispatches, because the roads from Gatto down to Berlin was totally clogged with lorries coming and going. You had the noise of planes coming in and out all the time. Just a very noisy experience.
And how close was your accommodation? Was actually at the airfield itself.
But a bit away from the actual airfield, but you know, only a mile or so.
And what sort of accommodation did you have?
Well, we had blocks, dormitory blocks. You know, no, they got. I mean, I believe it's all separate rooms nowadays, but in them days it was all dormitory blocks.
Was it comfortable or uncomfortable?
Yeah, it was quite good. It was solid brick built. It wasn't sort of tin huts or nothing like what you might have done in my early recruitment in Iraq in this country. It was proper buildings, you know.
And was it warm in wintertime?
Yeah, pretty good.
What about food? Where did you get your food?
Oh, we in the canteen and that, and it seemed all right. As I remember, pretty good. Can't remember. We had Naffy clubs on the site. Malcolm clubs was a particular club associated with RAF bases. It was called the Malcolm Club. And you could go there and sort of have food and that. Squadron life went on pretty normal, as I recall, even though it was during a hectic airlift. It didn't really... We mounted various guard duties, supplied this and that for connection with the airlift. But me, as a donor, a dispatch rider, I just done the normal. Sometimes out with the squadron, policing. If we went on convoy, I'd be scooting up to the crossroads and halting this or that and making way for our trucks and that with the personnel in. Squadron duties running down to Berlin with dispatches, sometimes for the Sincere Berlin, the army, I'm talking about overall commander, things like that. And we just normally lived a normal life, quite enjoyable really in a way.
Did you have to protect goods coming into Berlin? Once they were unloaded from the aircraft and distributed within Berlin, did you have to do anything to do with
that? No, we didn't do nothing like that. But one thing I can remember is during that period they were finding graves which were in the Russian sector of British personnel, and we sometimes supplied the tanks to go and get the bodies back that were dug up, and the Russians would hand them over, things like that. I never went on any detachment because, as I said, I was a dispatcher, but some of the other people on the flights that I was in, like,
so you did dispatch riding and general duties as well?
Oh yeah, we still trained soldiers within the Irish regiment, you know, even though you were a dispatch rider, you were still fully trained, and sometimes, you know, you had to do a bit of training again, and things like that, but something that you never forgot, you were well trained, like, you know.
Were there any particular security problems at Gatto that you had to deal with?
Well, we had to watch, with all that food and stuff coming in, you know, you had to watch, there was pilfering going on, you know what I mean? You see, the population had nothing, they were pretty poor then. Although this was 48, a couple years after the war, with a blockade and that, and, you know, there was a lot of hardship, so everyone had to come in. So naturally, you'll get people trying to thieve. So we had to mount various duties at different exits, where they might be coming in and out, you know, to see that there was a bit of pilfering stuff. Sometimes they would shove bits of butter up bicycle handlebars and things like that. It was pretty hard if they were caught, I suppose. You know.
Were these people who were employed to unload the planes, or were they people just...
They were German civilians mostly, but they would have RAF personnel or regiment personnel there in connection with it, probably supervising them or watching them, you know. But it was just jobs for them. They were sort of glad to get the stuff, so they just loaded it as fast as they could.
Was there a black market that you were aware of that you had to police?
Well, we wouldn't have to police a black market.
I'm thinking of perhaps RAF people themselves who were knocking a bit of this stuff off. Well,
I mean, black market is a harsh word. I suppose that anybody could sell cigarettes and stuff like that to the people and things like that and get money in, because you had the only baffle money, which was used, which was a camp money. Couldn't be used anywhere else. So if you wanted Deutschmarks, then you could sell cigarettes and stuff like that. But, I mean, large-scale black marketing was probably going on amongst the German population. You'd see them selling stuff in the various corners and stuff like that. You've got to remember that people were sort of all over the place. There was big columns with posters, photographs, still people looking for people. And so there was obviously fiddling going on, but all we were concerned was probably protecting the base, the RAF base. We had nothing to do within the town or that. We weren't certain any duties down there or in the town.
Were you aware of any RAF personnel who were perhaps dealing in goods that you had to deal with?
No, not to my knowledge. I don't remember any big cases like that. As I said, it probably did go on in these times, but I never knew anybody.
Were there any British civilian companies operating at Gatto? Or was it all RAF?
No, well, when you say civilian, there would be civilian people in a way connected with the NAFI and the Malcolm Club. They were sort of more or less civilians, but I mean, obviously they recruit in the NAFI, the same with some sort of organisation, but we'd call it civilians, like, and the Malcolm Club personnel. And that's all really, because everything else was the Air Force. The German people, of course, were employed in the canteens. Cashiers, cleaners, cooks, they'd be German civilians.
What were your working patterns like? How many did you do, a few days on, a few days off, shift work, or how did it?
Can't remember in detail, but it must have been some sort of pattern because there was four of us. So you were sharing the squadron duties and the station duties. But I can't, I'm afraid I can't, it's a long time ago, I can't remember.
Matthew Collins, Reel 2. You mentioned